Welcome to all of you brave souls who have managed to come here in the middle of a hot day.
You know, before I come here, I never had any idea whatsoever what to talk about.
And usually in the morning before I'm supposed to give a lecture, I have an idea what to talk about. And as soon as I come and I sit in front of all of you, I have no idea what to talk about. This morning I was thinking to speak a little bit about, because people had always had this conflict about impersonalism and personalism. And I used to think that, yes, this is a very important topic. In fact, there are many things which are very important to discuss and talk about and to understand. But I've become more and more aware that understanding something through talking about it is not very effective. And in fact, a particular philosophy that you may have is not necessarily a very important thing. After all, does it really matter what you think when it comes to, for instance, personal relationships? Let's say, for instance, you had a traffic accident, you're laying on the street, and you're a very devout Christian, and a complete atheist comes and picks you off the street and brings you to the hospital. Does it matter? Do qualities like kindness, love, compassion, are they affected by your philosophy? You may have any kind of philosophy that you can write about or speak about or think about, but the basic elements of life are always the same. Often we've heard there's no such thing as a Christian God or a Muslim God or a Jewish God or a Hindu God. God is God. The same thing can be applied to love. Does a Christian love differently than a Jew? Does a Jew love differently than an Arab? Is Hindu love different? What about kindness? Is there a sectarian form of kindness? Now, I know somebody may say, well, certain kinds of so-called love are different in different cultures. They may speak in terms of marriage, that in marriage in the Islamic world, the woman is seen differently than marriage, let's say, in the Hindu world or the Christian world or the Asiatic world. The interpersonal relationship is different. Okay. But we're not speaking here about the love. We're speaking here about an institution of marriage. That's something different. And if somebody says, well, in that culture, it's okay to beat your wife. But I would say, well, that's not actually love. Love is love. Now, these different kinds of ways in which you institutionalize love factually are not really love. But the love itself is common to all of us. It is something that transcends sectarian concerns. Kindness, love, compassion, mercifulness. These things are qualities which transcend all philosophical divisions or boundaries. Now, if you were to now start to speak about what's important in this world, mainly everybody would say that love is important, this human relationship is important, kindness is important. Of course, some people would say money is important, position is important. Okay, money is money. There's no like Christian money or Jewish money or Hindu money. Wealth is wealth. Position is position, regardless of what your philosophical understanding is of that position. So the point I'm making is a very simple point. Almost everything that is valued by people in this world is similar for all people. What is different is what you will do to get these things, or what you will do when you have these things. And that is totally dependent on what kind of a person you are, who you are. It is not dependent on your philosophy. For example, Hitler was a vegetarian. Maybe he had a philosophy that he didn't want to kill animals and eat them. That doesn't change what he was as a person.
You can have all kinds of great religious philosophies and act like a butcher or an animal. You can have no philosophical understanding and have no philosophy and be a wonderful person. The philosophy that you may have is not necessarily the deciding factor in what you are, but rather would be a manifestation of how you wish to express what you think. So my conclusion would be that whether or not a person is a personalist or an impersonalist is not the most important factor. Let's say somebody thinks that everything is just one, there is no differentiation in the absolute. Now, factually, how does that affect my interpersonal dealing? It's just an idea. In fact, I will still be what I am. I will still act and interact with other people in the exact same way. It's just that I have this idea. Now, when I start to organize my existence according to an idea, I have just lost contact with myself. And this is what I want to talk about today. Many people have some idea. This idea could have been given to them by someone else, or they could have thought of it themselves. When they start to arrange their existence according to this external idea, it is very different than when a person is acting as they are, but have a philosophy. If you just keep that in mind, I'd like to make a little bit of a diversion to help explain this point deeper. In political systems, you can see things in multiple ways, but one way is to see that all the people are subordinate to the needs of the state, which would make sure that all the people's needs are met equally. Or you can see that everybody is free to develop himself as he sees his needs. Now, these are just ideas, but when systems are created to manifest those ideas in reality, then they start to become divorced from people. People are no longer important. The system, maintaining a system, having a system, speaking about a system, maintaining the purity of the system becomes more important. And if a person is uncomfortable with that, then they have to be adjusted to the system, not that the system has to be adjusted to the person. Now, in another system, the system has to be adjusted to the person. Now, I'm not talking about political systems here. It was just an example. Think about yourself. Which feels better to you? You have to say. But you can follow what you feel is right, or you can follow what someone else feels is right. You can follow a system, philosophical, economic, political, scientific, cultural, whatever. Or you can follow your heart. Now, everybody has to follow some system. Language is a system. Without a system of language, there would be chaos. We all agree, yes means okay, no means uh-uh. That system we agree on, but we didn't agree to all say the same thing. In fact, we don't always mean the same thing, even if we say the same thing. We have system on the roads. Red light means stop, green light means go. We have laws. We have economic system. This bill is worth so much, you can buy so much with it. We have systems to heat houses, we have water systems. We have multiple systems in society. Now, when we are small, we also learn some systems. We learn the value systems of our family. We have been given many systems. Now, somebody might be thinking, my God, if you analyze it, I am a product of all of the systems which have been given to me my entire life. But is it really like that?
Even, for instance, you have been trained to be a certain way. Is that what you are a product of? Are you a product of your training? Or did you agree? Yes, I accept that. Are you a product of what you've been told? Or do you have something to say about it? Are you totally controlled? Or do you have free will? This is actually one of the original philosophical debates in man. One of them is, are we free or is everything predestined? Another is man ultimately good? Is man ultimately evil? Another is God ultimately personal or is God ultimately impersonal? These are questions. Let's analyze the free will and predestination for a second. If we are following all these systems, if we have learned from our parents what is right and what is wrong. No, I don't want to question. I thought there was some technical problem.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to stop for questions. Anyway, we're getting to that. Okay, let's go to natural laws. Let's take your point. In fact, that's a good point. Natural law. Why are all these systems set up? Because there's natural laws. I need to eat. I need to have shelter. I need to have families. So we set up systems to make these things work. And our families give us value structures, you know, don't say that at the dinner table and go to bed at night and wash yourself after this. And you would be surprised how much of the training from your family is in you deeply. How much of your father and mother's value structures are in you deeply. How much of their DNA is in you when things happen. After a while, you start to think, my God, I'm a product. I am a product, like a can on the shelf of a store. I'm a can of DNA and genes and qualities and body and what I've heard on the radio and TV and what I've been taught. And I am a product. I am following all these laws, I'm following all these systems. So, I mean, what am I then? Let's get back to the original point. We were talking about when you follow something external, an idea which somebody has given you, as compared to following your heart. Just like we've been given these ideas, even religious and spiritual ideas. You go to the church, they teach you a certain kind of philosophy, a dogma. You accept it. You follow your life according to this. This is external, given to you. You accept it. This is the same thing as when one is being given a culture, given a society to live in, given an economic situation, given a political situation. These things are external to you. You can either follow something external or you can follow your heart. In fact, one can actually say that everything but your heart, and we'll define in a second what that is external to you. Something given to you. Given to you by the heavens, the nature, the weather. Given to you by your parents, your body, the home you grew up in, the values you accepted, the economic situation that you accepted, the kind of brain you were born with, the qualities of this body. All these things are given to you. It's external. It's not you. It's external to you. But you accept it because you have no choice. Free will, fate. All this stuff is the fate. But what do you do with it? Now, to some extent, what you do with it is also a product of the situation that you are born into. For example, it's very hot out. What do you do? Some people think it's just great. You go to the beach and you lay in the sun and bake. And you get really brown. Some people feel good about that. Other people say, ugh, let me out of the sun, put me in the shade, put me in an air conditioner, pour ice cubes on the head. There's nothing free will about this. This is biology, biochemistry. It's the nature of our bodies. So that particular choice is not really free. Those are the natural laws he was wanting us to talk about. And those natural laws are powerful. But let's not lose heart. Let's not get disappointed and say, oh God, everything is all arranged. I have nothing to say about this. Because there is also the heart, and we know it. We know that I am me, regardless of all of these external things around me. We all want to be loved for what we are, despite all of that is around us, despite all that what we have done, despite all of what we are externally. We long for this. Now, we also have an enormous control over how we react and relate with these qualities of love, or kindness, or compassion, or mercy, or whatever. For example, you may see that a person has been born into a very cruel family, but may themselves be very kind. Or may have the body of a monster, or have a beautiful, innocent-looking girl body, and be wicked and cruel. The choices we make manifest our hearts. Now, why would it be that somebody would follow something external and act in another way? It's not so obvious that people will follow their hearts and be what they are. Sometimes people act in a very different way than what they are as people, because they're following some ideal. They're following something external. Yet, they chose to do it. So, you can choose to follow something external, or you can choose to follow your heart. So you can choose to either keep in contact with yourself or to divorce yourself from what you are. I find, personally, I don't know about you, but this point leads to some really interesting conclusions and further discussions. And for those of you who are wondering, why is this guy talking about all this anyway, I'll tell you. Because I think it touches on the very essence of what is spirituality, the very root of what is spirituality. Let me give you an example. Somebody comes in contact with a religious philosophy, very personal philosophy. God is a person, and you worship God with love, like that. Surrenders themselves fully to the philosophy, even does things which sometimes they think are not right for the sake of a system. I'm not saying it's always like this, but it can be that that person has divorced themselves from themselves by accepting something external to themselves. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't actually be totally involved in such a thing, be totally absorbed in it, filled with love in it. No. We're simply talking here about the situation where one loses contact with oneself by accepting something external to oneself fully. In other words, it's possible to be fully, totally devoted to some spiritual or religious ideal and have lost the essence of what is your own spirituality. Another person may have no philosophy, may follow no system, may understand nothing external like that, yet have connection to themselves and be more spiritually, more spiritual in essence. It's a very subtle point. It's a point which is striking at the essence of what is spirituality. That's why in the beginning I knew that even though I wanted to talk about the difference between personalism and impersonalism,
I knew it wouldn't stay at that because that's just a surface thing. Because once you surrender yourself to a system which was external to you and given to you, it doesn't matter what the system is, you stand a very good chance of being divorced from yourself. The very act of accepting the external thing has a very great possibility of divorcing you, of allowing you to divorce yourself from yourself. Love is love. Whether you're a personalist or an impersonalist, or a communist or a capitalist, or rich or poor, love is love. What my heart is what I am. It doesn't matter whether I think the ultimate is personal or I think the ultimate is impersonal. I know this is a very radical statement, but first of all, it makes no difference whatsoever to the absolute, because the absolute is absolute. What you think of it doesn't define it. And second of all, if you're thinking it to be some way, or accepting some philosophy which says it is some way, that means you don't know what it is. You just have an idea. Now, is the idea the more important thing, or are you the more important? I know this is really tough for some people to swallow, but it's not difficult if you just keep it back to what you are. Are you the soul defined by your ideas, or are you a being? Is your beingness factually affected by these external things? Let's go back again and go back to the self. Really, the only thing you can have contact with is yourself. If you have no contact with yourself, you can't have contact with anything else, because only the self can contact other selves. Only the self has the capacity to connect with something higher. All spiritual philosophies, all religious philosophies, all meditative techniques say the same thing. It's not that you expect these cells in your body to connect with higher energies. You do it with the etheric energy of your existence, your being, your spirit. All that really counts is to connect with your beingness. But most of us are so afraid of that, scared to death, because we think at the core of our being, we are bad. Again, another fundamental philosophical debate, is man ultimately good or is man ultimately evil? Because I know other people are good, but I am bad ultimately. That's a whole other discussion. But because one thinks like that, one is afraid of contacting oneself. Therefore, when one goes to a church or to a temple or a philosophical institution, one says, great, I just surrender myself totally to this thing. I don't have to contact me. I just get everything into the external and I am free. Understand? You can even be the greatest philosophical personalist and actually be completely impersonal. Why? Because you have divorced yourself. So, what is the difference if you have some philosophical ideal to be a personalist or an impersonalist? If you have divorced from yourself. The essence of spirituality is not a philosophical point. The essence of spirituality is to be in contact with what you are. To get rid of, just drop away all the external things which have been placed upon you and which you have accepted in order to avoid the self. How can the self be anything but loving, kind, compassionate? How can the self be anything but to see the oneness of all selves, which are just like them? And how can the self not feel connection with all selves in other places, including those who are very powerful? As far as I am concerned, the only thing that counts in life is life, which is made of experiences and realizations. And the only experience and realization which counts to me is mine. Now someone may say, well, that's very selfish sounding. But in fact, unless I get my own experiences and realizations, I'll never be able to understand
understand yours. A poor man can never really understand a rich man, and a rich man can never really understand a poor man. You've got to get these experiences and realizations for yourself. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. Even if you want to avoid for lifetimes and follow all kinds of systems and philosophies and understandings, that is also your experience. And even you have avoided that experience of avoiding, the experience of the frustration of not getting that experience you wish, is a valuable experience. My conclusion is a little radical. You can't push anybody to do anything. You can't force anybody to do anything. You can't make anybody be anything. You can't make them think anything. You can't make them realize anything. In fact, I don't even know why I'm talking. That's my dilemma every time I come here, because I can never figure out, why I should say anything, because it doesn't matter anyway unless you realize it. But somehow you come to these lectures. I think it's your mercy on me to keep you off the streets and give me something to do. But in fact, the only thing I can figure out that I would have value is to help you understand, if I can do that at all, to somehow or another reach out for those experiences by not divorcing yourself from the self. To not be afraid of making the statement, I am. And to experience from that state of being. To experience what I am as I am, and to reach out to others, to the universe, to the world. Can you imagine what it would be like if everyone was in contact with themselves? When you're in contact with yourself, you will immediately understand that it's not in your interests to cause trouble to others. You will see that your interests and another's interests are exactly the same. You will see things in a very different way. Because when you see things according to external arrangements, you see things in a way which is not filled with compassion and kindness and love and truthfulness. You will see arrangements based on fear. Fear and only fear. Fear that I'll be cold, or I'll be hungry, or I'll be lonely, or I'll do something wrong, or whatever. And one who lives in fear always meets fear. One who lives in a certain kind of external understanding always meets that. And when you live in love, you meet that love. When you live in the self, you only meet other selves. And when you see that you are meeting something external that a self has accepted, you accept that. And you see everybody moving along their own chosen path at their own chosen pace. And you're not upset. You're not agitated. And if you actually have love for others, you facilitate them along their path. You don't condemn anyone's path. You don't judge others. You don't try to manipulate or exploit others. You don't do things from a selfish point of view. You do things from the loving point of view. When you come to the platform of the self, you don't need philosophy. You don't care about all those things which have been said and what you have heard and all the millions of books which have been written. You will simply see that everything is simply spiritual love or the reaction of fear. You will see even the Supreme as pure love. And you will see there's no need to have any fear. You will realize that the only thing you can really change is yourself. You can change those things which are externally not what you wish them to be in your life. And you can continue to evolve that way. Tomorrow, somebody reminds me to speak about what comes after illumination. Because in these external philosophies, a lot of emphasis is placed on illumination as being the goal. Tomorrow, I'd like to talk about what comes after illumination. I'd like to make, from my own personal understanding, is that you're going to struggle with that every minute of every day. There's at no point a realization will have, we will not be struggling the, what do I do now? It's
It's one of the essence of having free will, is that you have to figure out what to do now. To understand what to do now is the whole essence of existence, because existence is happening right now. It's not happening in the past, and it's not happening in the future. It's happening right now. You know, it's like, again, it's the same point, that life is a constant struggle with balancing things. It's real easy to say, oh, that's because that person didn't really have contact with himself. But in practical reality, that answer doesn't help anyone, and it's not even right. You know, life being a struggle also means sometimes you give too much. If you examine a lot of the points that I've been discussing today, you'll see a lot of them are straight out of the Bhagavad Gita. Like, for instance, you'll become immune to all that you have heard, all whatever will be said, all these flowery words. These things are also in the Bhagavad Gita. Not very much emphasized, but it's also there. And there's also, don't eat too much, don't eat too little, don't sleep too much, don't sleep too little, don't have too much play, don't have too little play. This statement is leading us to the point where you have to have things in balance. But the world is always putting things in such a way that everything goes out of balance. Now, some people think the state of being out of balance is bad, but I don't think it's either good or bad. It's just what it is. There is nobody who's got everything balanced all the time, unless they are the most boring, dull, and lifeless person on this planet. Anyone who's living has all these influences which push the scale this way and that way all the time. But one has to, simply because it's unhealthy not to do it, one has to always keep things somewhat balanced. So if somebody, like you say, is always just giving and dissolves themselves in the act of giving, then the balance is like this. And that's not healthy for them, and that's not healthy for the person they're giving to. Therefore, one has to try to keep things in a more stabilized, balanced situation. But not to be elated when there's illumination, and not to be disturbed when it's not present, also in the Bhagavad Gita. You know, Krishna is the most experienced person, because he's also experiencing what you're experiencing. That's what it means to be the master of the senses. This is what we are. We are gods in experience mode. So therefore, he's giving us hints that, you know, it's going to be going on all the time, this thing we call life. Your understanding will go up and down. Your feelings and experiences will be sometimes tumultuous. Just consider the situation of the Bhagavad Gita. I think this is just the amazing sense of humor of Krishna. You're in the middle of this huge battlefield. Everybody's about to chop everybody to pieces. And here, the greatest warrior of all time is crying on a chariot. And Krishna is speaking this very delicate philosophy of balance, of reason, of illumination, of enlightenment, of action. And yet, what is the balance? Arjuna is going to go out there and kill everybody. Figure it out. I can't. I can just see Krishna on that chariot smiling. But that aspect of Krishna, people don't talk about. People mainly get into the book itself, the instruction. The irony of it, drama of it, cosmic humor. And then we worry about our problems. You know, this little problem we're having here. And there, you know, there's Arjuna, and there's millions of people about to get chopped to pieces. You think you got time? So this message of, it's just going to go on. Life is going to go on. You can agree to it going on, or you can disagree, but it doesn't matter. It goes on anyway. You can choose to be part of it or not. It doesn't depend on you. It goes on. Now what are you going to do? Just bring it in balance. What it means to bring it in balance is different for everybody. For Arjuna, it meant killing millions of people. But he did it, and it brought it into balance. For that person, it means taking some time out for himself. And the amazing thing about life is that perhaps the decision to do that for that person is as monumental as the decision of Arjuna to go out and fight. The quantity of experience, or the weight of what's happening, or any other circumstance or situation is not what defines the value of it. The value of it is how it affects you. And the littlest thing can affect you very deeply. And a big thing may not affect you at all. Isn't that fantastic? Sometimes even one word a person says can affect you more than a bomb blowing up next door. It also depends when it happens. Something happening to you at this time may have a totally different effect when the same exact thing happens at another time.